Good afternoon and welcome to Results Matter Radio. I am Erin Mazaris, Chief Marketing Officer and Director of Client Service for the law firm of Burr and Foreman, and I will be your host for today's segment along with my co-host Lee Cantor, who is the CEO of Atlanta Business Radio X. If you are new to Results Matter Radio, welcome to the show. Our show was developed to bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Before we jump into today's show, let me welcome my co-host Lee. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Miss Erin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well today. You're looking spiffy.
Thanks. You never comment on my appearance, but I appreciate that.
I thought I'd jump in quickly before you
exactly.
comment on my appearance.
I wasn't going to comment on yours because I've seen you in that before.
Oh, man, Lee. Sorry. Well, you know what? I'm just going to get right to our topic, Lee. It's pretty interesting, and I think one you should pay attention to.
Yes. What is it?
You know, we're pleased to have Lisa Warren and Ashley Hathaway join
Again?
Us today. They were in high demand.
Man, they're here all the time.
We brought them back. And today is about, which I think it needs to be, since you're being a little
feisty.
Yeah, very feisty today. It's about developing a progressive disciplinary action plan.
So I thought we'd play it out in real life. For our listeners.
You did? Well, you did a good job. You passed.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say you passed. Yeah.
Passing is failing.
Exactly.
Really.
This topic is geared for office administrators of physician offices or other healthcare providers, but will address specific tips for physicians who are directly involved in the interview process. Lisa Warren is a healthcare consultant with Warren Averett, Kimbrough, and Marino in Birmingham, Alabama. She has spent over 15 years working with physician practices on improving the questions. Oh, I'm sorry, improving the operations and financial performance of their organizations. You would think I'd got that right since she's been
You'd
here
think.
Before.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley is a partner at Burr and Foreman in their labor and employment practice and represents companies in all types of labor and employment matters, including litigation and advice. She has worked closely with many healthcare providers on their employment issues and represented them in disputes. Welcome back, ladies.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
We're glad to have you. So I'm just going to ask, because I think Lee needs to know this, exactly what is a progressive disciplinary action plan?
What it is an outline of steps to improve the employee's performance. So we pick an area of performance that is lacking, and then we give them specific details and steps that they need to do to improve it.
Okay. Well, with that plan then, why would you specifically use a disciplinary action plan?
Well, ultimately, the goal is to retain your employees. It's a whole lot more difficult to recruit a good employee than to keep a good employee. And so if an employee's performance is lacking, if we can give them a plan and have them improve it, then ultimately we've retained our employee, and that's a good thing.
Okay, so I guess out of the gate, we need to set some expectations?
We do, and there's a number of ways to do that. I think the first, and we've talked about this in the hiring process, is to know what they are supposed to do. Have a well-developed job description and make sure the person understands that this is what they are expected to do.
Okay. And where do you have that set out? Is that, Ashley, is that in some type of handbook, manual?
Some people will put their job descriptions in their handbook, but most people will just have separate forms, job descriptions, where they list what the duties are of the position. They list any requirements of the position, such as physical requirements, maybe if there are special attendance requirements. They may put any special knowledge that the person needs for the position. And the idea is that they have described to the person what the job is all about. A good job description also has something in there like perform other duties as assigned by their supervisor, because it's hard to cover everything in a job description.
But okay.
As Lisa said, it's a great tool for starting out the process, setting expectations.
So everybody's on the same page.
Exactly.
Well, and, you know, should we talk a little bit about the employee manual, since we kind of broached that and opened that door?
Is this part of it? It's a subset of this?
It can be. Some people will put their, or some employers will put their job descriptions in their employee manual. Some do it separately. You know, I have found that people tend to make changes to their job descriptions more frequently than their manual. So if you don't want to have to keep issuing a new manual, you probably want to keep them separate.
Right.
But it just depends on how your business operates.
And why would they change the job description frequently?
Well, you want to make sure that the job description accurately reflects what the employee is actually doing. And I say that many employers change them frequently, and they do, but some don't, and that causes a real problem, particularly if you end up in litigation and you're saying that someone did not perform the duties of the job, and then you look at the job description and it doesn't even have those duties in there. So it's really a best practice to frequently be reviewing and revising your job descriptions as the job may change.
Is that something the employee should stay on top of? Because it's going to affect the employee the most, right?
Yeah, the smart employee is going to want their job description to reflect their job duties too. That's a good point.
Well, and again, it comes back to setting expectations and that employee understanding what they're supposed to be doing. Because so many times the problems in performance is miscommunication.
Okay.
Or that's what they'll allege.
Right. So you've got this employee who may not be performing to their full capabilities or to the level that you would like them. And you think about, we need to look at a progressive disciplinary action plan. We set the expectations in the beginning through the job description. Kind of walk us through what's the next step or what's something else to be concerned about.
Well, one of the things we talked about hiring job descriptions, we have that in place. But once they become on site, I think it's important to have some sort of orientation program. And we had talked about before, usually by the time you get an employee, you're already short staffed, you're 6 weeks behind, and people are desperate and just throw them in there. But I think it's important to have kind of an orientation checklist, things that we've told this employee, every employee, when they start with the practice. And it could be simple things like, this is how you use the fax machine and this is where the bathroom is, to more detailed things that this is our confidentiality policy. Here's a copy of our employee manual. I need to get this piece of paper back that says you've reviewed the employee manual and you understand it. Go over their job description. Ask them if they have any questions about their job description. Document that you went over all of that information with them and put that in the orientation list. So again, we don't have this argument, well, I was never told. And as we talked about, the point is to have an employee who performs well. You know, we think of progressive discipline as this is a way to keep us from being sued for discrimination. But in the end, it's really a tool that the employee understands what they're supposed to be doing and that they do it.
So is the orientation then, and I never thought about this, even with myself, as I bring people into our department, we do an orientation. But is the orientation something that is brought up in court as well, just the agenda of the orientation? I know the employee, we're going to talk about the employee manual in depth, but I'm curious now about the orientation. I may need to pay more attention to that.
Yeah. If I'm handling an employee lawsuit, one of the first things I look for is the handbook acknowledgement and any sort of orientation checklist, because a lot of times an employer is relying on a specific policy that it used to terminate or discipline an employee, like an attendance policy or, you know, a workplace violence policy, whatever it may be. And the employee may claim, I did not understand the policy, I did not get the policy, I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to do that. And if the employer has a document showing that that information has been reviewed with the employee, that's a huge benefit in litigation.
So that also is why they make you sit through 3, 4, 5 hours of turning the page of the employee manual that you could easily read on your own.
Exactly.
Okay. Maybe. We're not saying that for sure, but maybe.
Well, and I think
mental note.
Yep. I would take special time on the things that you find particularly problems with employees, like your attendance policy and dress code and confidentiality. Those are probably the three biggest issues I see in practices.
Code is one of the three biggest things.
Frighteningly enough.
Dress code.
Yes.
Well, really? Lee, I didn't want to say anything, but my question about your appearance was short.
I didn't know that bathing suits weren't appropriate.
Yeah, we have all kinds of dress code issues. But that said, so if you have particular policies that you have in your practice, you may want to take special effort, because you're right. The odds of someone sitting and reading through a 66-page document are probably
small.
Yeah, and
even if they sign it and say they read it.
Right. If you're going to hold them accountable to it, pick the big ones. Job descriptions and some of those big policies, and go over it with them.
What else do we need to talk about whenever it comes to the employee manual? Because I think that's probably a huge piece of making sure that they've read it and, you know, understand what's in that manual. What should we have in that manual? You know, do you want to talk about, you know, things?
Are these things like mandatory things, or are these things just are nice to have? Like, is this legally?
Is a manual something you have to have?
Well, you don't have to have a manual. There are certain policies that you are supposed to have, because there's certain information you should communicate to your employees. An example is, if you have over than, or if you have more than 50 employees, you should have an FMLA leave policy, Family Medical Leave Act policy. So you have to communicate
now,
that
why,
information
just for
to
for my
them.
Own edification, why is it over 50 employees? That's just what
that's
the rule
that's
is?
That's just the statutory minimum. Okay. And so you have to communicate that information somehow. And so there are certain policies like that that you really do want to have. You want to have an anti-discrimination policy, an anti-harassment policy. That's very important in a defense of any harassment or discrimination claim. You want to have a wage and hour policy, making sure employees know that they're supposed to be paid for all time that they work, and that if they're not paid for all time work, that they report that. So there are certain policies that you would be very well advised to have. But a lot of the policies, Lee, are optional. I mean, it's just how much information the employer wants to communicate to the employee. And some people have a 10-page manual. Some people have a 60-page manual. And I think both Lisa and I get questions sometimes about, should I have a manual? And if so, what should be in it? And, you know, some of it varies with the practice and how large the practice is and the type of issues they face. But generally, you know, what I say is you shouldn't have any more policies in there that you are not going to enforce. What's worse than not having a policy is having a policy that you don't follow.
Oh, so even consistency.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. And, you know, if you have something in there and then you didn't follow it and you end up disciplining or terminating an employee, they may say, well, your policy book said this was what was going to happen.
Right.
So that, and I found that, you know, policies get outdated very quickly, or people put too much detail into policies, and so it's difficult for them to follow all the details. So you don't want to have any more than you're going to keep up with.
I think it's hard, too, when you have a company, or I guess with physician practices, maybe you don't fall into this because they're smaller, but just a general company, having those types of policies and trying to follow them for every single right. individual, because even the management level that manages those, they're not consistent in their way of thinking. You know, you can tell them they need to be, but yeah, so then, like you said, it's sometimes better not to even have it.
Right, and consistency is a big issue. And, you know, in a physician practice, you have, you know, if you have each doctor has an assigned nurse, each doctor may tend to treat their nurse a little bit differently.
That is right. A classic example.
So when you say differently, like, okay, well, she can take this afternoon off, but the rest of you can't because
exactly.
she did right. something special for me.
Or right. that's well, just their working relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or one doctor may not care as much if you're 10 minutes late, right. where one doctor gets very upset about that. So,
or maybe the dress code.
I was just going to say, wear tennis shoes.
Right.
Or,
right.
Mm-hmm. right. And with healthcare, there's a lot of compliance issues, too. When we talk about things that are required, we have to have a HIPAA, the confidentiality. You know, your employees need to understand, and you need to have a confidentiality policy. And that same thing, compliance plans right now are optional. But your employees need to understand that if they see something going on in the practice that could be fraudulent, that could be a problem, that there's an open door and that they're able to communicate with management. So there's a lot of things that are also special in healthcare that you need to be sure to have addressed that aren't optional.
Okay. Well, what are some of the other things about consistency? Is there anything else that we need to bring to their attention?
I think this tends to be the biggest challenge in physician practices because it's the classic front desk against the back office. And sometimes the back office is favored by the physicians and the front office is favored by the management. That's just the way it structures. And so to try to be consistent across all of your employees
all
is
your
a
ranks.
Challenge.
Okay.
And it's sometimes a battle that managers need to fight with the physicians and vice versa.
How often should you be revisiting this manual? Because I would imagine practices grow and, you know, shrink periodically. So maybe the rules change.
You know, I say best practice is take a look at it once a year. You know, at least make sure that there's been no significant changes.
And
that
then
you need
evaluate
to handle.
Each of the employees to make sure that their job description still fits what they do and do like kind of a thorough audit of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you could do a once a year, you know, even just quick audit to be sure that your handbook and your job descriptions are still accurate, that would really go a long way.
And really the classic opportunity to do that is evaluations. And that's something else that we, when we talk about progressive discipline, is evaluations. And those can be done annually. And part of an evaluation is usually going over someone's job description and are you performing on to level on all of these elements of your job description. And so when I write a job description, I'll say, if your job is to answer the phone, we want very specific requirements of you need to pick it up on the third ring and you answer the phone, doctor's office, this is Lisa. So have very clear expectations. So then when you sit down in an evaluation situation or progressive action situation, that they know that you didn't pick the phone up on the third ring.
You know, it's interesting because the evaluation process, I think, is where across the board every business fails because they don't want that conflict.
Right.
And so putting it in writing that someone has failed to do their job description, they tend to just either not write anything and give them mediocre remarks,
right.
Or they give them, you know, high marks because they don't want to deal with the backlash.
Right. And that can create huge problems. Ashley and I talked about it. If you have great evaluations and then all of a sudden we have progressive action for performance, it won't make sense when people are looking at the documents. And one of the hard things about evaluations is particularly in physician offices where you have, as I discussed before, a front desk that has limited interaction with the back office. And then the manager may have limited interaction with the nurses, and that's a physician role. So what I usually do is have the manager complete a survey and give it to the doctors and say, can you evaluate your staff quarterly? And that way, if there's a problem, she'll find out about it proactively, be able to help manage it versus waiting to the end of the year. And all of a sudden we find out this nurse hasn't been doing her job for a whole year.
Right. And that's interesting because I hadn't thought about the type or the individual who is assigned to evaluate needs to make sure that that individual actually is working with the person that's being evaluated.
Right.
Even though they may have the title of manager,
right.
You know, and they're managing the office and the employees, they may not have direct contact.
Right. So it makes it difficult for them. And they sometimes feel like they don't have the credibility with that particular employee to do the evaluation.
Well, and the employee may get frustrated and say, why are you having them evaluate me whenever I don't work day to day with them? I want the doctor evaluating
me. And so that's a good tool. It takes a physician less than 5 minutes to fill it out. And then the manager can get some proactive feedback because all the studies show that in evaluation periods, you tend to look at the most recent month. I mean, that's as far back as anybody can intellectually grasp. So all of a sudden, if they've been doing a good job this past month, but a terrible job for the 6 months prior, then now we're back into a favorable evaluation situation. So by doing something quarterly, then you're able to better track any kind of performance problems. And I, too, also have them keep, I call it kind of a performance log. So if an employee is doing something well on a particular day, you log that. If they've done something poorly, you log that as well. And that helps you remember what's going on with that employee.
So when you're working with a practice, do you give them the tools to?
I do.
So what other things should we look for or be concerned about? I think we had talked at one point about some objective facts versus subjective impressions. Where does that fall in? And tell us a little bit about that. Is that, you know, are those things that need to be measured? What are those
things?
Yeah,
like how do you measure they were nice to the patient?
Well, that's the classic. How do I write
the size
up,
of their smile?
Yeah. How do I write up a bad attitude employee?
Right.
Because the progressive action lends itself very easily to people who make errors in scheduling. Okay. So I can print out the schedule and you put this in the wrong place, or you were late this many times. And that's how objective you want to say it. You were late on the 15th, the 18th, and the 21st. This is too many times. You're going to be written up. That's the easy stuff. It's the bad attitude that's hard to do. And so one of the things we've talked about is, well, this classic example where you ask someone to do something and they roll their eyes and do the big, no. How do you write that up?
Never,
right? You
never.
Know, what do you do with that? And so
if you figure it out, tell my kid.
Oh, are you going to use this in your home? Yeah.
This is tips, not just for employers, but for parents of teenagers.
I don't know if this is going to work because unfortunately we can't terminate them, right? So,
well,
so what you can do is pick the behavior that the bad attitude employee is exhibiting. For example, when I ask you for help, you roll your eyes and you sigh. You know,
so you have to point it out.
Point it out and confront them. A, they may not realize they're doing it. And they can change that behavior.
But again, what if they say, look, I still helped you.
Right. I did what you asked.
It's still inappropriate, would be my response. And so document some of those very specific instances where they've exhibited. Chances are, if someone has a bad attitude, you can pick the things they're doing wrong. If they have a bad attitude, they may not be doing their charts as quickly. They may not be answering the phone the way they should. They may be rude to patients. They may be rude to fellow staff members. So this bad attitude, you can generally pick some of their pieces of their behavior and write up that piece versus saying you have a bad attitude.
Do complaints count? So
definitely.
Like, yeah. So if internally, you know, people they work with complain and write something up, or right, patients mention it. Okay.
Definitely.
Right. And that advice is so helpful if you do happen to find yourself in litigation, because a lot of times, you know, litigation doesn't happen for several months later, and people have a hard time remembering the specifics. Mm. You know, they remember that the employee had a bad attitude.
Right.
They remember that the employee was rude, but they can't exactly remember who they were rude to or when it happened or why it was significant. And so if they've done a good job, like Lisa said, of documenting exactly what happened and putting down objective facts, that really helps in the litigation process.
So are there certain things that, you know, as you go through, it sounds like you set the expectations in the beginning, and then you hire them and you talk about, you know, the things that they need to do, and you go through the orientation and you go through the evaluation process, hopefully quarterly. You address these things either written or verbally. What are some, you know, I'm assuming that there are times where you said we can't terminate our children, but there are times when you need to go straight to right, termination. Do you have any thoughts on or advice for the folks on certain situations that you would say, you know what, I'm all for a plan, I'm all for helping people and getting them on the right track, but sometimes you just got to be willing to fire somebody?
There is no question. If people are abusive to patients, if they're abusive to coworkers.
So you don't necessarily need to go through this progressive.
No. And back to the employee manuals, every manual should say subject to progressive action or immediate termination when you list your violations, because there may be some things that you just cannot go through the progressive action.
Okay. And you said some of those, I think I cut you off, some of those things were harassment.
Harassment, either patient or employee, violation of confidentiality. Embezzlement.
Stealing, I was going to say. Yeah, that back to our money issue.
Fraud.
Okay. What about, how do you handle the use of technology? And I know that's probably social media, something that we can do a whole nother segment on. But, you know, what if they're on Facebook? I guess that's in your handbook that, you know, because it's their lunch hour.
Right. Well,
that's tricky.
It is. That's a tricky subject to deal with. That's one of those situations where I find that sometimes the employer says one thing in the handbook, but something else happens in reality. For example, they may say in the handbook, you know, no, you should not be on the internet at all. No accessing social media sites. But really, everybody does it at lunch.
Well, it's on their phone.
Yeah, it's all over the
even
place.
If you shut it off their computer.
Right, they can still do it on their phone whenever they want.
Right, and in a lot of offices it happens, and the employer's fine with it as long as it doesn't affect job duties.
Well, what is it when they go on Facebook and go, my boss is such a moron?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and everybody knows where that person works.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's a problem. And, you know, that's a particular point
of
concern.
Not that your employees have done that, Lynn.
Right.
You're an employee of one.
Just you.
He sure tells on himself a lot, doesn't he?
I think she's picking on me. Right. I need a lawyer.
Yeah. Hey, I know one. But, you know, I think that is a particular point of concern for healthcare providers,
right,
because confidentiality is such a big issue. And, gosh, if you have an employee, you know, on their Facebook site saying things about the practice or worse about patients.
Right, that's even worse.
That's a big problem. And that's why, you know, those things that Lisa talked about that you handle upon initial employment, like a confidentiality policy, are so important.
So everyone's clear, everybody's on the same page, and then the employee signs off on it.
Right.
You make them sign off and say that they're not going to do these certain behaviors, so then you have a recourse if they do.
That's right. And it's easier to address it as violation of the confidentiality policy than it is to, well, you got on Facebook
reference
and Facebook. Said this
the
about
exact.
Me.
Okay. Right. No, that's great. Well, ladies, as you know, since you have been on our show previously, it has become a tradition that when nearing the end of the discussion that we make a last request. So, ladies, I would ask my last request, which would be, can you offer one piece of advice for our listeners? And if so, what would that be? Ashley?
Mine would be that it's important to have good policies, but it's more important to enforce them consistently. And don't take on more than you're willing to enforce.
Lisa?
I think, again, my point about progressive discipline is that you want the employee to perform well. And if you continue to communicate with the employee about their poor performance, they may actually self-select and realize they are not the person for the job, and they will quit or move on to another position. And
that's a good one.
Take the mess out of your hair.
Right. Right. When you don't have to do it.
Right.
Well, we are about out of time for today's segment, so I'd like to thank our guests, Lisa Warren and Ashley Hathaway, for joining us today. This was a great discussion. Should you have any questions for Lisa or Ashley, please visit www.resultsmatterradio.com to find their direct contact information. Thank you again to our guests and my co-host Lee. On behalf of Byrne Foreman, a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast, we would like to remind you, if results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give us a call. You can visit our website to find the right attorney for you at www.burr.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great day.